So we'll be learning Leonid Nishmasam, and we'll pull out a few stories about them, because that's basically all I did today, was listening to stories about these two Rebbeim. And we'll talk a little bit more about them as we go. But they were very, very different and contributed to Klal Yisrael in very different ways. But both of them, I think, align beautifully with probably every Midah that we're going to study. But in this one in particular, it seemed to fit beautifully. And so we're as we pointed out last week, we're looking at extremes in Midos, because a Midah, if you were to open up a second Midot in the Mishnayot, you would not be reading about character traits, you'd be reading about measurements. A Midah is a measurement, and Masechet Midot is actually the Sefer in Tanakh in Mishnayos that talks about the measurements of the Beis HaMikdash. And so we're talking about Midos, how measured we want to be in our Midos. And so the two extremes of the Midah of, you might say, your self-focus is Gaiva and Anava, ego and humility. There's a lot in it. It's one of the largest chapters, and which is why we have 7 pages. I very much would appreciate people letting me know if we appreciate having English, appreciate having Hebrew, appreciate having the Sefer inside. I basically just took out random excerpts that I thought were apropos and interesting. But we'll keep going, and the more people let me know how they're doing and what they're thinking, the more fine-tuned this can be. And so I guess we'll jump in. Talking about ego is kind of a funny thing. I was telling my wife, as we discussed last week, and as she was embarrassed to find out that the shir went up online and a lot of people heard it. My wife's a big tzaddikus, and I told her I was talking about ego, and she's like, girls don't have egos. And so apparently for my wife, it's not an issue. She doesn't think that it's a problem, or she's so aware of how much of an ego problem I have that, like, in comparison, it's like basically means nothing. But what if you know someone or you yourself have any struggle with ego versus humility, then this will be for you. If not, then this will be a throwback to when Emma was giving shiurim about relationships, and this will be for something to look for in a future spouse. So, be ready. We're just going to get into the basics. We've got a few pulled quotes from here about how awful ego is, and at the bottom, how worthwhile it is to have another. And again, a lot of what our author does is basically collate Mari Chazal and Psukim, and so we're going to see a lot of that as we go. And so the very, very first thing we learn in Orchos Tzadikim is Hashar HaRishon. Nidaber bo al midos ha-gaiva. We're talking about ego. Ma tov shenizdam etchil l'chol ha-sharim b'bnei chiyuv ha-adam l'ibadol mimena. It's the most important thing to talk about. This is how you got to start out of work on midos, because we got to stay far, far away from having a big ego, of having pride. Ki hi pesach l'ra'os rabos. It leads to a lot of bad things. And it's the worst one of all. Now, there are a lot of bad midos, but apparently ego is the worst of the worst of the worst. Lachain, Sarecha Adam, or Aliz Chachem, Ulan Anhiga, Minaka Royal, Relitko Sosa, Bemakum Shenra Ruyabo. And you got to push it away. You got to stay far, far, far away from Gaiva. Now, we'll just point out from a psychological level, without getting into all the extensive research, where does ego come from? What does it mean to have a big ego? In a psychological sense, ego comes from a lack of confidence. Anytime someone is trying to be bigger than they really are, anytime they're trying to fill a void, it's because they feel like there's a gaping void. We'll discuss it more as we go. But just as a framework, when we talk about someone with a big ego, it's not that this person has high aspirations. It doesn't mean that this person even thinks highly of themselves. That's not the issue with an ego. Ego is often something that's coming to compensate. And the reason why Chazal pointed out is that this is not a midah that exists in and of itself. It's a midah that exists in contrast to a lacking of a different midah. And so you're only using it to compensate. I don't feel good about who I am, and so I'm going to present myself differently. I'm going to push myself forward into the world, as we'll discuss in a moment. But it's all coming because you don't really feel good about who you are. And one of the things we'll discuss is how to develop yourself a little bit more so that there's no need to compensate with an ego. And we've heard this, but it's always good to review some of the bad things about having a big ego. That's from paragraphs 10 and 11 that we quoted a little bit here. Balei gaiva heim mis'avim b'enei Hashem. It's a toeva, it's abomination. Shenemar tovas Hashem ki gavah lipi. And we also say Amar Rav Hoseinu kol mi sheyesh bo gesus haruach. This is the one that I learned in Masechet Sota that really got me very nervous. Anyone who's got gesus haruach, anyone who's got a big ego. It's as if you worshipped idols. Now we can unpack this if we're interested. And the more people speak up and talk and ask questions, the more interesting and exciting this will be. I have a lot of thoughts that happen in, like, you know, in my house when I'm preparing things, but it's much more interesting to have conversations. I'd much, much prefer to not do anything we have written out here and to only talk about what you guys find interesting. So please, 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 I'm encouraging you to talk. It's not going to happen, but I can still encourage. I can still try. I'm not going to stop trying. Eventually, after like 2, 3, 4, well, we're going to do ego and humility this week, and then next week is going to be Busha. And after this week and next week, I think that you're going to be like so compelled that you have to speak up, because that's basically all we're learning about. It's just very convenient the way the safe was set up for us. So we know that Gaiva is really bad. We know we want to stay away from it. It's the worst of the Midos. It's almost like worshiping a Vodazara. Now, why is it almost like worshiping a Vodazara? On the plain, simplistic level, if we think about it, someone who says, like, I'm such a big deal, you're not leaving space for Kadosh Baruch Hu. If you make yourself so big, then where does God fit into the picture? If you credit yourself with everything, where does God fit in? So we'll get to that a little bit more. And then at the bottom, you'll notice, at least on the English side, I have a G for Gaiva anytime we're quoting from the Gaiva chapter, and an H for humility anytime we're quoting from the Anava chapter. Why it's not an A or an Ion, I couldn't tell you, but it became an H. And so this bottom one, even though it's on our page, it's still page one, is actually part of the humility chapter in the beginning. And here it explains Anava a little bit, because, as my wife pointed out, if some of us have more of a propensity toward humility and not toward a big ego, then spending all the time describing what a big ego looks like is a waste of time. But describing what humility looks like might be helpful in setting a framework for our Nashim Tzidkaniyos. So what is humility? Umahi ha'anava. Hi ha'kna v'shifus ha'nefesh v'koshiv atzmo ka'ayin. It's not thinking of yourself so much. And what we like the quote, I don't know who said it, but humility is not thinking less of yourself, but it's thinking of yourself less. That being said, that's not what we say here. What the Orchos Zedigim is telling us is very much so, v'choshev atzmo ka'ayin, thinking of yourself as being nothing. Now, what in the world does that mean? How can I possibly think that I'm nothing? That's inauthentic. I think I was going to say it later, but we'll mention it now. Having spent many, many years dealing with a big ego, and at a certain point I just kind of gave up and let it happen. But I used to like talk to my Rebbeim, and he used to say, it's like, Rebbe, I need help. I want to work on Gaiva. And the answer was always the same. And anyone who has done this probably has experienced the same thing. The answer is always, because you're asking the question, it clearly you're working on it. Just asking the question is enough. You've already started working on a big ego. And the response always was, no, I'm just very self-aware, and I know that I have a big ego, but it doesn't mean that I've done anything. Actually, you've stoked the fires a little bit, because now I feel extra good that I'm like such a tzaddik that I know that I have a big ego. It didn't work out well for me. And so what does it mean that you're supposed to think of yourself as being nothing? In the Tivarie, every single year, they at the end of the year, from Pesach until June, they have Kayetzman. They have the summer's month where they learn a Gemara. But rather than learning the Gemara slowly, well, they'll cover like one page over the course of God knows how many weeks. They do it quickly, and the goal is that the boy should learn a Gemara. And especially if you haven't learned a full Gemara before, it's very exciting. The first CM I ever made was at that moment. And so the year I was there, we learned Masechet Sota, and Sota at the very end talks about Gaiva, and the beginning also. And Rav Nebensal, Rav Victor Nebensal, who's the chief rabbi of the old city, he was the prime student of Rav Shlomo, one of the prime students of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. He's a massive, massive tzaddik in so many ways. We'll talk about him a lot. He's my rebbe. He's my posek. He's wonderful. And if you ever picture a tzaddik, like, that's basically what Rav Nevinson looks like. In any manifestation you can think of, his wife was the best, but not for now. And so Rav Nevinson will come to the see him from time to time. If the guy had enough guts to invite him, Rav Nevinson would come, and he'd say a few words. And so he was speaking about Gaiva, about ego and humility, and this line brings it to mind, because Rav Nevinson said that if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is Yesh, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is something, then Avigdor Nebensal, the way he calls himself, is Ayin, is nothing. So that was a paradigm shift for me, because ordinarily when people talk about comparing themselves, I'm going to compare myself to you. I'm going to compare myself to the person next to me. When Rav Nevinson thinks about himself, he doesn't think about himself in the context of the people around him. He thinks about himself in the context of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So unless you're really not so intelligent, no one would ever think they're greater or even comparable to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And so, to some extent, it's always a question of where are you measuring? What's your yardstick? Are you measuring yourself based on people who aren't so impressive? Or are you measuring yourself based on on the most impressive. And that's one of the descriptions of ANOVA, of figuring out who is your yardstick, who you're measuring up against. And let's continue. Still at the top of the first Hebrew line, V'ha'adam chayev ba b'chol eis v'chol zman. You always have to be humble. Lios and nevaze be'enav. You got to think lowly of yourself. V'shafar ruach v'rach levav v'rach nishbara. Shorshar ANOVA. What's the root of humility? She'yakshu ba'atzmo ba'od. Shehu shalev v'shakei. To be peaceful, quiet, to not be so loud and ostentatious. A lot of times when we think about people with big egos, they're very loud, they talk a lot. That doesn't bode so well for me. Bari of Asher, you're healthy and you're wealthy. Asher Habore Baruchu, Heiti V'motuva. What are oftentimes the reason why people are overly confident? They have a lot of things. They're very successful in one area or another. Sometimes they're just because they were given physical gifts. They're very tall, they're very strong, they're very intellectually capable. Those are all just gifts from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But if you're like Reb Nevinson and you recognize that all these come from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, you think about yourself in the context of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, then you're fine. But if you don't, if you forget about that, if you kick out a Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's almost like you're worshipping Avodah Zarah, then you're in trouble. V'shehu en arayla. You're not really deserving of it. God just gave it to you. And so you're not going to think so highly of yourself. V'sheyakshov galus hakel v'romus tifarto and v'yakshov ma'ani. And think, what am I in comparison? And I think that's enough for our paragraph. We're not going to read every single piece inside, but we're going to see what we can accomplish. The other piece I'll mention that we're not going to read inside is that a lot of times when people make mistakes, I mean, we're just coming out of a very intense political season. The only other time that politics is like a big topic of a conversation when presidents aren't being elected is when politicians make stupid mistakes, oftentimes involving stupid sexual things. Most of the time when things are happening like that, it's because of some ego issue. And so the Orchid Siddiquim points it out, but we're not going to delve into that too much because I'm smart enough not to spend too much time on that. You can call Emma and ask her what she thinks. So where do we see Gaiva Nava? Where does it come up? You know, we might be aware of it, but we're going to break down into four different categories where we might see it happening and where we want to watch out. So the first is the question that we need to ask, and maybe we should have started this way, but is Gaiva a good thing or a bad thing? We're not going to stop. There's a full stop. There's a yes or no question. We can do a yes or a no. Good or bad? Bad. That's a unanimous bad. I'm assuming that all of our friends online said bad also. Okay. I'm going to keep trying. I apologize, but I'm going to keep trying. We're going to talk about Sneha. Ziva, what?
I feel like too much Gaiva is bad. And Gaiva in general is bad, but self-confidence.
Ah, interesting. So Ziva helped out a lot. Oh, we want to increase our volume. Thank you. So Ziva helped out a lot. Ziva pointed out that too much confidence, too much gaiva is bad. But actually, there's a base level of gaiva that's very helpful. Now, all of you made a big mistake because you saw that I turned the page. And the very top of the page says personal gaiva is good. So I have to wonder, like, what are you thinking?
I just said that it's like a Vodasara.
So we did just say that it's like a Vodasara. This is a good point, but so now we're going to have a big kasha, we're going to have a big question. But first, let's see inside, what are we talking about? There are times where gaiva is a good thing. V'zosi gaiva saguf shehi tova. Sometimes gaiva is a good thing. And we see an example, we'll say the story outside, that Hillel, we know Hillel, he started this whole house of learning, Hillel and Shammai. Hillel was once, he loved the Beis Medrash, and he's going, and he's walking on his way, and his students say, Rebbe, where are you going? He says, I'm going to go do a mitzvah. Rebbe, what mitzvah are you going to do? Maybe he's doing shiluch hakein, I don't know, maybe he's doing some big, fancy, impressive mitzvah. So I'm going to go take a shower. Probably a bath. I'm going to go take a bath. Rabbi, why is that taking a bath a mitzvah? And he says, you have to take care of yourself. You have to be kofedik. Think about it. All these like statues of the Greeks and the Roman generals, they get cleaned every day by these people. Kodesh Baruch Hu created me. Kodesh Baruch Hu formed me. I'm a statue from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You think it's not appropriate for me to clean myself? And what Hillel is pointing out is something we discussed last week. From Rabbi Dr. Twersky's father, that you're special, you're better than that. A couple people mentioned that to me this week. Apparently a lot of people listened online, Baruch Hashem, and that stuck with them. A friend of mine told me he's going to put that on his wall. You're better than that. So Hillel understood that Kodesh Baruch Hu endowed him with something divine, that he's better than that. If we're going to put it in the term that Rabbi Sachs uses, he spoke, I thought it was a kinnis, but I don't think it is. He spoke in front of many, many, many Jews, and he talked about his personal life story. And he quoted Shakespeare, because Shakespeare says, we've heard it before, that some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some are greatness thrust upon them. What does it mean to have greatness thrust upon you? It means that anyone who's Jewish has greatness thrust upon you. So everyone, one of us, every one of us here, every one of us online, has had greatness thrust upon us. And so if you're being forced to be great, if you're a princess, if you are someone special, because Kadosh Baruch Hu made you special, then you just take care of yourself. There's a level of gaiva in that. Someone who's not special, someone who's not a dignitary, might not need to dress the same way, might not need to act the same way, but we do. The confidence to do that actually comes from gaiva. If you have mamish no self-confidence at all, no self-worth at all, you're never going to carry yourself appropriately. If you think about anyone who we describe as regal, so you can imagine, the person I'm imagining is my wife's best friend's grandmother. She's a Holocaust survivor, and she was just always, she was always sitting upright, she was always looked refined, and it's because she had a sense of self-worth. If you don't have a sense of self-worth, then you're not going to act that way. And so it's actually incredibly necessary for you to have a little bit of gaiva. It's just you can't have too much. The Gemara in Sota says you're supposed to have a shminis shebishminis, which is a fancy Gemara term for 1/8 of 1/8. Any of our math people, what's 1/8 of 1/8? Exactly, 1/64. I'm assuming everyone was mumbling it, but the masks prevent us from hearing. And you're supposed to have a little bit, just a tiny bit, enough that I should have self-respect. You know, there's a halakha that a Talmid Chacham can't go out with a stain on his shirt. Who cares? Like, why should it matter if a Talmid Chacham has a stain on his shirt? Because someone who's a Talmid Chacham is in some ways the most refined form of human being. And if you're a refined form of human being, your physical embodiment of that has to be special, has to be clean. You can't go out with a stain. And so when we talk about gaiva, the goal is not to become nothing, to think that we are mamish nothing. We're supposed to have some level of personal value. We just don't want to have too much. We want to have just that 1/64th. And so, yes, we have this contradiction that gaiva is bad, but we also have to have just a tiny bit. Our internet connection's unstable. God willing, we'll stay with our friends. And so the first level of gaiva, where gaiva comes up, is actually not something to be aware of. It's actually it's something to be cautious about, because we don't want to undersell ourselves. We don't want to think that we're not doing too well. Right now, I think most of us are in college, but at a certain point in time, you apply to jobs, and if you're deserving of making $50,000 in your first job, and they offer you $40,000, it's not gaiva to say, I'm sorry, I'm worth more than that. That's not a manifestation of gaiva. That's a manifestation of understanding who you are. And it would actually be the inverse. It would be terrible if you allowed yourself to be paid only $40,000 when you deserve $50,000. And so we want to clarify within ourselves that I have value, but we don't want it to get too far. Because when it gets too far, then we see the next few things. Number two, this is extra personal. Now, for anyone who knows what extra personal means, know that I'm using it wrong. Extra personal means non-human, that it's interacting with like animals. The way we're using it, though, is that when you think of yourself as being more than another. You know, we know, as much as we love and care about animals, we are better than animals. We are a higher form of creation. And sometimes people interact with other people and treat them like they're a better form of creation, that they're above the person they're talking to. And so one of the warnings of gaiva, and I'm going to look at inside, is that someone is going to talk to somebody like they don't matter, like they're not important. Are we okay? It'll be fine. Baruch Hashem, you're popular. And so you see this, someone is not interested in talking to poor people. You see someone... we see it all the time. You see someone walking on the street, and someone might smell bad, they might be dirty, they might be homeless, and some people are not interested in talking to them. Some people are cautious, and to some extent we need to be. A lot of times people who are living on the street have mental issues, and so you don't want to like invite them into your home without any warning. That's not necessarily safe. But you can talk to anyone. You don't have to worry so much. There's a girl I went to high school with named Adina Lichman. She's an incredible human being. She started something called Knock Give a Sock. Now, if you didn't spend a lot of time on secular college campuses, you probably haven't heard of it. But Knock Knock Give a Sock is like a social organization where it started out, at least the way it started out, you go around and you knock on people's doors and you ask if they're willing to give a pair of socks to people who are homeless. Because while she was giving out sandwiches to homeless people, she was talking to a few of them and found out that they actually, more than food, you know, there are soup kitchens, there's lots of ways for people who are homeless to get food, but when it gets cold, they need a lot of socks. You can imagine socks get wet, they get dirty, and you can't wear them anymore, and they get worn out faster than most of your articles of clothing because you're putting more pressure on them. And so she started gathering socks for homeless people, and that was only level one of what of her goal. At this point, Knock Knock, Give a Sock is not probably not the most appropriate name because it's not so much about college kids knocking on each other's doors, finding, trying to get socks. Now, like, Reebok and Adidas send her socks. It's very cool. Now, what she really does is that she has corporate partners, and she has dinners where people who are homeless and people who are working for whatever big shot company get together for dinner. And the goal of that is that just because someone doesn't have a house doesn't necessarily mean that they're dirty, that they're unintelligent, and they're not worth meeting and spending time with. And people who are homeless, not always, but sometimes have suits, and there are times where people, like, don't realize that they're talking to someone who's homeless. They're just sitting down talking to a very nice person, and what do you know? They don't actually have a house. But the goal there is that someone should never look at somebody else and say, oh, I'm better than they are, that this person is a lowly individual. But ego will sometimes create that in a person. And so we want to be aware of it, we want to avoid it. And as we said, in the Emma context, if our any future spouses look like are acting like that, stay far, far away. Now we get into something that we might have heard. First, we'll open with a couple stories. Mordechai Willig, who Baruch Hashem has not passed away, is still very much alive, but I love this story so much I had to share it. I didn't even hear the story. I follow Rabbi Arya Leibowitz on Twitter. I follow him on YU Torah also and listen to most of the things he puts up. But I follow him on Twitter. I highly recommend it. It's awesome. He's amazing. And he tweeted from Camp Cayley. He's the camp rabbi in Camp Cayley. He's in Camp Cayley. And on visiting day, Rav Willig was there. And a little boy walks up to him and says, I have a hard question. And he says, okay. He says, it's a really, really hard question. Rav Willig, like, kneels down and says, okay, we'll put our heads together and see if we can figure out what the answer is. Mordechai Willig is one of the Rosh Yeshiva in YU. He's one of the most prominent rabbis in the country. There's no question the little kid's going to ask him that's going to stump him. But when Rav Willig talks to little kids, that's how he talks. Rav Soloveitchik's grandson, Rav Meir Twersky, is a genius of geniuses. When you watch him play with his grandchildren, it's entirely unassuming. You would never know that this man is extraordinarily intelligent. He's the combination of a Twersky and a Soloveitchik. Like, there's, like, not really much. That's like breeding intelligence, if there ever was one. And Ramirez Twersky, you would never know. Now, where it comes up in the content. And so we'll look at this for a moment, and then we'll jump back into a couple more stories. But how does Gaiva come up in an interpersonal context? So we know that it might come up where you might look down at someone. Well, let's say, you know, someone's not being obnoxious. Someone's not being rude. But is someone listening? You know, Adam Grant is an extraordinary organizational psychologist, a great author. I highly recommend his books and his Twitter, although Leibowitz's is like 90 times better. And Adam Grant talks a lot about work things. And people, at this point in time, you haven't had that many work experiences. But when you do work with people, whether someone listens during a meeting is a big indicator of whether or not their struggle with Gaiva, we'll put it that way. Because if someone's open to new ideas, then you've got a chance. Actually, for anyone who's looking at our source sheets online, I printed these out earlier, but right before I left, I added one tweet from Rabbi Leibowitz, because Rabbi Leibowitz is awesome, and he's been tweeting quotes from Rabbi Sacks. So I apologize that none of you have this quote, but I have it, and our friends online have it. But this is from Rabbi Sacks, about the idea of learning from other people, of being open to new ideas. Rabbi Sacks, Zichrono Livracha, said, those who have humility are open to things greater than themselves, while those who lack it are not. That is why those who lack it make you feel small, why those who have it make you feel enlarged. If you feel good about yourself, you're going to make someone else feel good. When you interact with people who make you feel good, it's because they have self-worth. But if not, God forbid, then they want to make sure that they feel good, and oftentimes it's through making sure that you don't look good, you don't feel good. And that's an example that comes up numerous times. I don't think we actually have even quoted in here, because it's, let's say, Muvan Me'elav, but it comes up often. And so we'll read a little bit more inside, because officially I think this is a text-based cheer. On page 3. All right, we'll start at the bold. Vyesh Odonov, at the top part, he explained, our author, maybe he, maybe she, explains that, you know, you have to be humble to learn from a teacher. But then we continue and say, Vyesh Odonov Tovim Od. There's another wonderful kind of anava. Sheikhana Lifne Talmidav Vifarish Lahem Kol Sasum. That you humble yourself in front of your students. That you explain everything that's not so easy, not that's complicated. Students don't always understand things so quickly. And a teacher that's full of gaiva is going to just want to move past them. These students aren't exciting. And as explains further on, we'll continue. Legadel lefi godlo lekatan lefi ketana. Someone who's a great teacher, someone who's humble, doesn't struggle with gaiva, is going to explain things the way they need to be explained to whomever is listening. If it's a well-versed crowd, they'll explain things to a well-versed crowd. If it's not, they'll explain things that way. It's not according to what I want to say, it's according to what they need to hear. A lot of times you'll hear people speak about what they want to say as opposed to what they want to hear. Sometimes you'll hear people speak about what they want to say because no one is asking questions, and so there's nothing else they can do. And they're just going to sit there and keep talking. And there's nothing we can do about it. And so, v'yifarish, v'yaksar, v'yifarish, v'sever panim yafos, aj sheyavinu. We talk about when Rav David Feinstein would get shilas, that it was always with a smile. And he was a good old door. He was a posek for everyone. And people would ask him shilas, and sometimes they were wonderful, complex shilas, and sometimes they were not so impressive. It's fine. And it's so important to... But he would always take every shilas and take it seriously. I'll tell Rav Nevensel's story, even though Baruch Hashem, he's alive. But we can tell stories about living people also. Rav Nevensel once got a question. Rav Nevensel learns in the Tevariyeh based Medrash, and a woman came in, and with a very, very serious look on her face said, "My cat licked some of the cholent out of my pot. Is that my pot still kosher?" Now, if you know anything about kashrus, you know that that's not a problem. Rav Nevensel is a gadol hador, knows a lot about kashrus, and sat there and thinking. He says, "I don't think it's going to be an issue." And she says, "Thank you so much." Afterward, the Talmidim approached Rav Nevensel and said, "Like Rebbe, that was a toss-up. That was easy. Why did it take you so long to answer?" And he said, "It might have been easy for me, but for her, it was very hard." So sometimes people are going to fly through a topic. They're going to teach to the person in the highest level of class as opposed to the lowest level because they want to feel good about themselves. Sometimes, even in the way that you're answering, you're going to be able to be sensitive to where the person's holding. Someone who's really not worried about themselves isn't going to show off, "Oh, I know that question. That's easy. No big deal. I'm a big shot." No, instead they're going to say, "Well, where's this person coming from?" And we might have teachers who teach the lowest to make sure that every single person understands, and we might have teachers who want to feel good about themselves and they only talk about the most complicated things possible. God willing, we'll have teachers who excel at another, and it's not such an issue. And we point out a little bit later on, at the end of the line, the lo yomer, right in the middle of the second to last line, this person is not so smart. His brain is basically like a rock. Someone who complains that their students are not smart enough is an indication that they've got a lacking. Anytime someone's going to point out a flaw in someone else, it's an indication that they're really lacking something. Because if your job as a teacher is to teach someone, that doesn't matter how intelligent they are. It doesn't matter whether their brains are like rocks or like sponges. Your job is to teach them, so you're going to teach them. But only if you have the self-confidence and the self-value in order to do that. And Rav Parade is a prime example. Rav Parade in the Gemara in Erevin taught his student 400 times before he could understand. Not because Rav Parade was a bad teacher, but because his student just couldn't get it quickly enough. And so we taught him 400 times. We see later on, continuing in the middle of page 3, that it's not just that, oh, you're willing to teach, but are you willing to learn? Are you willing to learn from someone else? Someone who's not so impressive, someone who's not so necessarily so smart, someone who's not so so high up on the totem pole. And this, I think, is actually fascinating. Because there are two examples in Halacha where you see that this, where basically we force people into this anava of learning from somebody else. Someone who speaks Lashon Hara. Now, you can imagine, why would someone ever speak Lashon Hara? It's because they respect the person so much, because they look up to them? Now, anytime someone speaks Lashon Hara, I think it's fair to say this is a blanket rule. It's because you think that you're better than they are. There's an element of gaiva in every time someone speaks Lashon Hara, which is why the Gemara and Arachin list a few different things that will cause someone to get Sarat. One of them is Kesus Ruach, is a big ego, and one of them is Lashon Hara. They're one and the same. It's not two separate ideas. It's all one mida that just might manifest or we might be able to pinpoint in different ways. And so someone who speaks Lashon Hara, what happens if you're living in the Torah world? You get saras, right? So this person gets saras, and in order for you to know definitively that you have tzara'at, you need to be diagnosed. But you don't go to a doctor. You don't go to a Talmid Chacham even. You have to go to a Kohen. Now, Kohanim come in all shapes and sizes. Sometimes you'll have a Kohen. It's a big Talmid Chacham. So if I'm a big Talmid Chacham, but I also look down on people, and I speak Lashon Hara about them, then I might want to go to a big, big Kohen, a big Talmid Chacham Kohen, to announce, to declare that I have tzara'at. But you know what? It doesn't matter what level Kohen it is, any Kohen can pronounce me with Tzara'at. I'm a big Talmid Chacham. A child, a 13-year-old Kohen can say, that's Tzara'at. He might not even know that it's Tzara'at. Someone just tells him. A big Talmid Chacham who knows what it's supposed to look like, he's learned all the sugyos, the big Talmid Chacham might just tell the little 13-year-old Kohen, just announce that that's Tzara'at. And once he announces it, now I have Tzara'at. A 13-year-old gave me Tzara'at. I'm a big guy. I'm a big Kashyav guy. And so just by getting the Tzara'at, the process of getting it, in some ways, lessens a person. It indicates that you can learn from anyone. I was reading in Ravolbi. I'm zocher to learn Ravolbi Ali Shor with a Karusa every week. And in the chapter of Anava, he talks about how, I'll preface this with, I don't fully understand. I haven't wrapped my mind around it. I'm not quite on the level, even conceptually, of Anava to understand why this was a good idea. But Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz used to, as a form of making sure that his gaiva wouldn't get too intense, too, as a form of anava, would ask young children advice about things. And he would follow them, he would listen to them, even though they're young children. And so there was one day, it was kind of cold outside, and he asked the child, he says, I'm kind of cold, and it's cold outside, but it's mincha time. Should I go daven mincha in the yeshiva, or should I daven here and stay in the warmth? The kid thought for a minute, said, I think you should stay inside, you should stay warm. And Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz, the mashkiach of the Mir Yeshiva, was like, okay, and he does it. Now, I don't think I would ever do that, but I'm also not Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz. But this idea of, are you willing to learn from someone? Are you willing to learn from anyone? You know, we say all the time, you know, Ezehu Chacham Halomemi Kol Adam, who's wise? Someone who learns from everyone. But maybe we're not willing to learn from everyone. We're willing to learn from most people. Now, that might be prudent. It might be a good idea. If you have someone who seems crazy and they recommend that you drive into a tree, I don't recommend. I don't think it's a good idea. But are we really willing to looking to learn from every single person? And if we're not, is it because of gaiva or is there some other reason? Is it a logical concern? And so it's what to think about. We'll do one other example because I love this one. I think we're probably familiar with this. What happens when a Sefer Torah is puzzle, or when you're not sure if a Sefer Torah is puzzle? Yes, exactly. You have a little kid read it. Now, let's just understand for a moment that writing a Sefer Torah is very complicated. It's very elaborate. Like, only chashuv people are able to write them because you need to know a ton of halachos. And there's not just like the halacha. There's like all the Kabbalah and all the things involved. Safras is like a chashuv union, if you will. We were talking this morning about a certain rabbi who basically matired a certain kind of Sefer Torah that got him in trouble because he was ended up going up against the union, against this like collection of Sofrim in a certain city. And you don't want to go up against the Sofrim. They're an elite group. So I have to spend a long time training and learning in order to become a Sofer. And I write the Sefer Torah, and it looks like there's a mistake, but we're not totally sure. I might think, this is a chet. It's usually a chet, because the way that a Sefer Torah chet looks, it's basically two Zions with a little thing on top. And so you have to ask a kid. And so you bring in a kid. I'm a big Talmid Chacham. I'm a big Sofer. I know exactly what it says. This clearly is a chet. But if a little kid comes in and says, that looks like two Zions, he could be literally 5 years old. I remember when this happened in Kushner when I was growing up. I was not Zilka to be called in, but I saw the Sefer Torah afterward. It was still very cool that it happened. Five-year-old kid could say, that's two Zions, and we paskin like the five-year-old. Not like the Talmid Chacham, like the five-year-old. And so over and over again, we see examples in halakha where we force people to be humble. We force people to learn from anyone and everyone. And the last area where you might see gaiva is actually Kalpei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's our time frame? Okay. About being Sameach B'Chalko. And in short, we're not going to get into the whole elaborate Tzvar Torah, but someone who's not happy with their lot, someone is basically saying, I think God made a mistake. I think that the place that I'm in, the way where I am in my life is not appropriate, and that God should have done it differently. And that's gaiva, not toward your friends, not toward the people around you, but toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, because you think that you're smarter than God. There's an awesome story with Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. He's walking with his chassidim, and he stops, and they stop. Rebbe stops, they stop. And he says, if I was a Kodesh Baruch Hu, do you know what I would do right now? This is going to be awesome. They're so excited for the answer. They say, what? And he says, exactly what God's doing. You think I'm smarter than God? Come on. Sometimes people think that they're smarter than God. Not being Sameach Bechelka, not being happy with where we are, is basically when we feel like we might know how things should work more than a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that, quite honestly, is a form of gaiva. Now, how do we diagnose it? How do I know if I'm experiencing gaiva, if I'm about gaiva or not? One other story with Rav David Feinstein. Rabbi Leibowitz, as we know, has been tweeting about Rav David Feinstein and Rabbi Sachs all day. And he pointed out from Igros Moshe in Yoredei Achelik Aleph, Simon Kuf Zion, that Rav Moshe quotes an 11-year-old David Feinstein. Not Rav David, because he's 11, but Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav David's father, was such an unav that if his son pointed out an interesting Maharsha and Baba Basra, then he was willing to quote it in his tshuva because he made a good point. If someone makes a good point, doesn't matter who they are, doesn't matter how old they are, then it's of value if you're an unav. If you're not distracted, if you're not trying to compensate in any way, but you're just willing to learn, you want to learn, you want to try in the MS, it doesn't matter who's pointing it out. And so even Rav David Feinstein, at 11 years old, was able to do that. But Kalpei HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Sameach Bechelko, we'll talk for a moment about Rabbi Sachs and Rabbi Feinstein. They came from very, very different backgrounds. So David Feinstein was the Gadol Hador's son. He was Rav Moshe's son. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs came from who I'm sure is a very, very righteous individual, but not a Gadol Hador at all. Rabbi Sachs talks about his own Jewish journey. He was not expecting to be observant. He was not expecting to be a rabbi in the slightest. And yet, if either one of them had ever said, I wish I'd come from a different family, they wouldn't have become who they were. Rabbi David Feinstein was a Posek Hador. He knew Kol Torah Kula, but he did not teach the way that Rabbi Sachs taught. Rabbi Sachs might not have been the Posek Hador. He might not have been paskening every Shiloh that came his way. Rav Schechter would pass Shilohs along to Rav David Feinstein when Rav Schechter didn't know what to do. He wasn't passing them along to Rabbi Jonathan Sachs. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs was not a Posek in that sense. But he taught more Jews than probably anyone else in the world today. There were tons of people who didn't learn any Torah ever except what Rabbi Sachs was putting out. And so if either one of them had ever wanted to be in a different situation, then they would have ruined what their thing, where they were supposed to be. Sometimes the gaiva actually distracts you from where you should be. If Rabbi Sachs wanted to be with David Feinstein, I think most times we don't assume that David Feinstein wants to be Rabbi Sachs. But if Rabbi Sachs decided he wants to be a chashuv posek, then he would have undermined who he was, the incredible oratory skill, the incredible erudition that he displayed on a frequent basis would have been lost to us because he was trying to be someone he wasn't, because his ego got in the way of who he was supposed to be. So Baruch Hashem, he didn't. So how do we tell we're a Balkaiva? Not just after the fact when people talk about you, but for those of us who are working on ourselves, who want to be better, this actually might be the most important thing we're going to learn, because it's how do I figure out, is this gaiva or is it not gaiva? So maybe for us, it's not a problem, but at least for yours truly, it is. And so we'll look at a couple things inside. The top part is just pointing out that the goal is to do things for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in the second part, in what we call 34 Lamed Daled, we say, in the bold, Lachain, Ba'is Asher Ta'aseh Ma'aseh Atov. If you're about to do something, you're about to do a mitzvah, Tavkin ba'atzmecha mimi ata mekaveh gamul. From whom are you hoping to get reward? Asher me'akel hu shalem. If someone says, I want to give nachas to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's a good mitzvah. Do that. Aval im me'acherin eino shalem. But if you're thinking, some people are going to notice it. If I daven longer, people are going to be impressed. If I go to this chesed activity, people are going to think I'm in big tzaddikas. If I go to this camp or this summer program, then it's going to look good for my resume, then that might not necessarily be best. That's, you're not doing it for a Kodesh Baruch Hu, you're doing it to impress other people. That really, that's a manifestation of gaiva. And continuing in 25, in Chav Hei, Hagaiva lilim yaksik tov l'atzma. Someone who's a baal gaiva is always going to take credit for themselves, because we're trying to compensate. You're trying to make yourself seem bigger, seem better. And so you're going to point out all the things that you did well. Someone who's humble doesn't need to tell you about the things they did great. Now, Baruch Hashem, we all have parents, and your parents need to know about all the great things you do. It's not Gaiva to tell your parents how awesome you are. It's actually giving them nachas. It's a big mitzvah. And so anytime you can, tell your parents that you're awesome. Let them know, because if you're awesome, it likely means that they did something right. So don't tell other people, but just tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But just tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu and tell your parents. And back and in the bold in that same paragraph, V'tamid husameach b'mikshol chavero yidiyasam. When your friend's not as good as you are, when you do better on a test, when you get into this program and your friend didn't, if you're ever even like a little bit happy about that, there's a little bit of gaiva involved. I'm so happy that I was able to do it, and that can be great, and that's wonderful, but if you're not upset that your friend missed out on the same opportunity, then we've got a little gaiva to worry about, and we want to try and fix that. And if for sure, if your friend messed up and it makes you look good, we don't want to be excited about it. That's awful. And that's getting back to our Sachs quote about people who are great want to build someone else up. If you're people who are not so great, who are not so big, end up trying to put somebody else down. God forbid. And this bottom part, we have to leave this in because I think it's so good. Talking about humility, in the bold, Ikra Hanava, Sheikhana Lo'osam, Shehem Tachtav. Where do you see humility manifest sometimes? Sometimes the most poignant indicator of humility is when someone's interacting with someone who can't do anything for them. There's a quote from Samuel Johnson that I want to get this right, so I'm going to read it. Samuel Johnson was, he was just paraphrasing what everyone else has said, but I like the way he said the best. He's some 18th century British writer. He said, "The true measure of a man is how he treats someone who can do him absolutely no good." A lot of times people are nice and respectful to someone who can help them. But when they really can't, then how do you treat them? I actually signed up for a job once when I was at a big event and I saw my future potential boss talking to the coat check person. And he was sweet and he was warm and he was considerate and so thankful that she was helping out at this event. And that was the moment I decided that it was worth going, because that was the moment where I was like, okay, he doesn't just care about the big cluster people, he doesn't just care about being mechavet someone who can do something for him. He cares about being mechavet everyone. Now, we're not going to get into it because I guess I spent too long trying to get you guys to ask questions, and I guess we bit off more than we can chew. But things to beware of, things that sometimes come up in our attempts to be humble. Sometimes the Yetzer Hara goes too far and says, oh, you want to be humble? Okay. So, tell you what. The best way to be humble is to actually basically stop doing mitzvot. Don't go in. Maybe if I go to that shir, people are going to think, she thinks so highly of herself. Maybe if I show up early to davening, or if I leave right now so that I can go to daven mincha, people are going to think like, I think I'm so chashuv. Or they're actually going to think that I'm chashuv, and I don't want people to think I'm chashuv, and so I'm not going to. Anytime we're confronted with a mitzvah, we'll talk about this more next week, but anytime we're confronted with a mitzvah, remember, what are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to please the Kodesh Baruch Hu? Are we doing it for Ratzon Hashem? Or are we doing it to impress other people? And so even if we might end up impressing someone else, it's still not going to be a problem, because ultimately our goal is Kapa Shemaya. Now, ultimately we want to develop a balance. And so you might have people who are tremendously really humble, but there will be times when they don't seem so humble. I don't know if anyone was reading what came out, but over Pesach, Rabbi Meir Twersky, whom we pointed out, is extraordinary, but very humble, very soft-spoken. He used very, very harsh language about people who were not careful about COVID. He's from the Soloveitchik dynasty. He felt that it was a conservative pikuach nefesh. And so because it was something he felt so strongly about, he was very outspoken, used very strong language in his letters to try and convince people that this wasn't a good idea. And recently, unfortunately, when all the riots and the protests were going on in Brooklyn, Robert Twersky recorded a video, a 45-minute video, explaining why this was a Chilul Hashem and why it wasn't okay. And the next piece that Orko Sadikin points out for us on page 6, we're not going to see it inside, is that it's okay to be humble, you're supposed to be humble, but if there's a concern of Chilul Hashem, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not being praised properly, then you need to get up and say something. There's no place for anava, or humility, or for our own comfort even, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not being honored properly. Finally, we'll just look at tools for success. And truth be told, if you learn the Geras HaRamban, then this first paragraph is not so necessary, because it's basically just paraphrasing. And it talks about how you look at people. And we discussed this a little bit, but we'll just say it a little bit more explicitly before we finish, that the easiest way to not feel Guyverdick in a certain situation is to look around. And if you talk to, let's say you're talking to someone, and I'm talking to you. We'll talk to this computer screen, it's easier. I'm talking to you, and all I need to do is think about how I'm not no better than you. Now, maybe it might seem like on an honest level, I am better than you. Maybe I do more mitzvahs than you. Maybe I know more Torah than you. Maybe I have better midos than you. And so how am I not going to feel like I'm better than you when I have all these things going for me that you seemingly don't? What the Igeres Ramban and what the Orchid study can point out is that, just think about it. Let's say you have more things going for you than the other person. Then where should you be? Not where are you right now, but where should you be? Are you comparing yourself to the person across from you? Or are you comparing to yourself to where you to whom you should be? What's your base of measure? And so when you're talking to this person's base of measure is totally different. This person shouldn't be comparing themselves to you. You shouldn't be comparing yourself to them. You should be comparing yourself to someone who's as great as you are. And so the fact that you're such a Balgaiva and you feel so good about yourself is actually not such a good thing if you're looking at someone who's not quite on your level. When if you're not so athletic, like someone that we know, then you can like play basketball with six-year-olds and like you're going to feel great because you beat all of them. But that's not substantive. That's not real. If you play basketball with someone who you can really play with, then you can feel good. So if you're talking to someone, you feel like, oh, I'm so much better than they are. In all likelihood, they're not on your level. You're not supposed to be comparing yourself to them. And if they are better than you, that's easy. That's not so hard. That's what he points out on top. The bottom is my favorite source and the most important for what we're doing here. The bottom part says, basically, surround yourself with people who are better than you. Surround yourself with people who are good, people who are going to bring you up. You know, as we pointed out from Rabbi Sachs, that someone who's full, someone who isn't feeling lacking is going to build you up. Surround yourself with people who are going to build you up and whom you can build up. We don't want our friends to be people who bring us down. We want to be surrounded by people we're going to aspire to be great because they're great. I spent 3 years working for Yachad, and I feel very strongly that time period was like Shemush. It was like intense time of learning about Ahavas Yisrael. People who work for Yachad in general are tremendously loving of any Jew. They don't ask questions. They don't care. They just love everybody. And the time I spent there, I was surrounded by people. My friends were people who just loved people. And I grew to love people more because of it. If you surround yourself with friends who are striving to grow spiritually, who are coming out to a shir, whether on Zoom or in person, if you surround yourself with people who are davening, who are learning, who are trying to be better, you will get better. Now, a Baal Gaiva might say, I don't want to be with people who make me look bad. I want to be with people who make me look good. But if you really want to be great, then the only way you're going to do it is by surrounding yourself with those who are going to push you to be greater. And so whether you want to develop Avos Yisrael, Yachad's a great option. If you want to develop learning, spend time with people who learn more. My roommate when I was in YU for 2.5 years was Rabbi Zach Green. Now he's Rabbi Zach Green. Then he was just Zach. But maybe he goes by Aaron Yosef now. But Rabbi Zach Green is much smarter than I am and much firmer than I am. But because he was my roommate, I used to get up for an earlier davening because he was going. And because he was learning later, I was learning later. Just by being around him, I was better for it. And that's the opportunity that we have. That ultimately, if you want to avoid any of the bad midas we're talking about, but in particular gaiva, if you surround yourself with people who don't have a gaiva issue, you're probably not going to have a gaiva issue. Oftentimes when someone's feeling threatened, when they're feeling small, then they're going to push back and their gaiva is going to have to fight up. But if people make you feel good, you're going to feel good on your own. You're going to make other people feel good. And so ultimately, whatever the manifestation is, whether it's being Sameach B'Chalka, whether it's the interpersonal relationships, it's seeing the value of an individual. If you want to develop any of that, just spend time with people who do it. That's really the only goal you need to set. And with that, I guess we'll leave open for questions. I can imagine there are many, many questions burning, but I think that's all for tonight. Yes, please.
Well, how does it come in terms of like us overindulging?
Ah, so where does Gaiva fit in for our friends on the computer? Where does Gaiva fit in? You know, maybe we're better than animals because God told us we're better than animals, but does that mean that we're better than non-Jews? Where does Gaiva fit into that? I mean, that's really like, it's like 19 shirim that we could theoretically give. But just like when I talk to someone, if I talk to a 7-year-old and I know more math than the 7-year-old, I don't feel excited about it. The only area in which Jews have an advantage over non-Jews is in a spiritual realm. But just like 7-year-olds aren't expected to know a lot of math, non-Jews aren't expected to be spiritually impressive. Push comes to shove, depending on where you are on the... All right, I wasn't going to tell a story because I... Yeah, we'll tell it. On Motzei Election Day, you know, my wife went to vote. We were driving back, and I was a part of the city I wasn't used to being, and I ended up accidentally almost turning onto a one-way street. And so I try backing up. The car behind me is not backing up. And so I'm like kind of waiting for the car to back up. I was clearly in reverse. The reverse lights were on. And this woman comes out of the car on her phone, okay? And she knocks on my window and I'm trying to remember the last one. It was so sweet. Excuse me. Would it be possible to please, you know, move your car so that I can get through? I'm from New York. And I'm a boy. I would never, ever be that polite. Even like when, if I was talking to her with David Feinstein, I wouldn't have been that polite. But this is a person who has no obligation. There's no, she's never been to a Musar Shmuz where people tell her that she should be polite. But she was polite anyway. And anytime we're looking at someone, to remember that of what I experienced versus what they experienced. I don't know what schools everyone's in, but over Shabbos, I was talking to a friend who's in one of the local schools for graduate school. And my friend was saying that, the program is supposed to be hard, but I don't find it so hard. Anytime you're academically gifted, it's because the schooling that you went to is probably much better than the schooling that a lot of other people went to. And so maybe if you're in Turo, if you're in Stern, it's not going to be the case at this moment. But my wife went to Queens College in New York. Queens College is a commuter school. A lot of Jews go, and a lot of non-Jews go. And my wife is not the greatest student in the entire world. She is actually very hardworking, because as we know, she's a tzaddikus and incredible. But she's not, like, the most academically gifted. She didn't get 1,600 on her SATs or 36 on her ACTs. Do you remember where I am? But the education she got was much better. Anytime we're better than someone, it's not because of something we did. It's because of the opportunities we were given, particularly before you're, like, 30. No one has done anything by the time they're 30 of their own volition. It's usually almost always something that their parents or their environment contributed to, just because you're not enough of a person until that point. And so if I'm talking to a non-Jew, it's not a question of Gaiva feeling better or worse, like I'm better than them. In all likelihood, Kalpei Kodesh Baruch Hu, they probably haven't eaten any limbs off of live animals. Hopefully they haven't committed adultery. They probably haven't kidnapped anyone. They have somewhat of a form of government. They're fulfilling all Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. I could list off a lot more than 7 Averis that I've done even today. And so they're actually much better off than I am. One of the things the Igaris and Rabban points out, I don't remember if Orchus Sadikin does, is that if you know more than the person across from you, assume that you have more Averis because you know more. If I know that I'm not supposed to do X, Y, and Z, and I do, then I'm in trouble. If they didn't know that, then okay. Maybe they do it, maybe they don't, but they didn't know any better. So I can appreciate it, and chosenness in general and how we think about ourselves in the world versus people who aren't chosen, aren't Jewish, is a shmooz in and of itself. But from an ego perspective, it doesn't fit. It doesn't make any sense. All right, any more questions? It's so much more fun when there are questions. All right, we'll keep working on it. One this week, maybe two next week. We'll keep trying. But it's been a pleasure learning.